I'll be following the notes quite closely. Your notes has a sermon set and a tabernacle fun worksheet set. So we are coming through Exodus into Leviticus. It is our last 2 weeks of our Foundations, Genesis, and Exodus study. Many of you have started reading Genesis and Exodus for yourself. That's wonderful. Please keep going past Exodus into Leviticus. Continue to finish through Numbers and Deuteronomy. Finish the Pentateuch. Because the Pentateuch of Moses is the foundation of faith. Everything in the New Testament are what the apostles and the early church understood from the Hebrew Bible. The Hebrew Bible is the Old Testament. If you understand the Pentateuch as your foundation, when you see things on the internet, which is Christians writing ideas about the Bible and Christianity that are not biblical, you will be able to discern it. If you don't have the foundations, then you will be like a little sampan in an ocean with the winds, right? You just blow here and blow there, and you won't be able to tell what is biblical, what is godly. Because everything seems very convincing. So if you have not started to read it for yourself, you must begin. If you have, wow, that's awesome, please keep going. And for some of us who have already studied this, will you go one step deeper to work through with your leaders how you can be equipped to instruct or mentor another person who is new to the Bible and Christianity? There are notes, there are resources. Your leaders can work directly with you. If you need to ask me, I mean, many of you all know me personally, you can ask me. Sometimes on Sundays, I have a lot of other people to talk to. Maybe that's not always the best time. But you can let me know. If I walk past you and I ignore you, it's because I am legit blind. You want to see my SAVH card, I can show you. Yeah. So you have to tell me, Ming, I have a question. I might not be able to address it then, but we can always find a time, or I can send you some resources, or I can help your leader as well to help you. So there are different ways to do it. Yeah. But because we are ending this series, I don't want it to be like, you know, we go movie and then the movie ends and, oh, show finish. Let's go on to another show. You know. Wow, that's a nice picture of a tabernacle. Anna, you got it there. Wow, very accurate. okay, let's keep this up. But You can ignore my first slide. They have it in their notes. In your notes, I began with a question. For those of you who have started reading, have you all felt there's any difficulty? Because when I read second half of Exodus and Leviticus, I feel quite drained. It's quite a tedious work. And halfway through, I find myself drifting off to La La Land when I'm reading it. Do you feel that way? So I'm not doing a reading comprehension session now, but this part one on your first page of your notes, I continue it on page 6 because I didn't want all the reading comprehension bits to be in the front. So I pushed it to page 6 and I put there part one continue. So can you flip to page 6 and you see a table there? Can you peep over to your neighbor and stab your finger on his paper if he's not sure where? Because I know this is the one set of notes that is the most number of pages and most number of words. Usually we just try to make half page or one, right? No more than one. This is like 8. Can you imagine? So on page 6, there's a table, right? And the question there asks you, it points out that one of the difficulties of reading Exodus compared to, say, Genesis, is that you flip different text types. Sorry, this is a bit English comprehension, right? For those of us who are trying to get through it, there's the narrative story, and it starts off that way, right? With the 10 plagues and the Red Sea parting and all the exciting stuff that gets made into the movie. And then after that, no one makes the rest of the stuff into the movie because it's not exciting anymore, right? That's the narrative part. And then God makes a covenant, the covenant book and the covenant blood. In chapter 24, that was last week's message, right? Suddenly there's a switch in text type. It's called law. Okay. I'm sure the lawyers here will say my treatment of how to read law is the most superficial. But for the rest of us who are not lawyers, it has to do with really nitpicking what is included and what is not included. So in your small group, could y'all talk a little bit about text types that you are familiar with? Like insurance documents, for example, or if you're a student and you're trying to get half a mark from the teacher for your English comprehension test that came back, the way you scrutinize how the teacher marked it, that's how you read Exodus 21, 22, 23. Yeah. So how you read law, what's included, what's excluded. So there's a flip, right, from narrative. You're always playing a movie in your head. You're feeling the emotions. You see all the actions. And then suddenly you have to flip, right? So you do have to be very conscious of the different text type. And then after that, it goes to procedure. So procedural texts is like when you go IKEA and you buy a shelf and you have to make it yourself. Thick manual that comes with the big box, cardboard box. That's a procedural text. Those of you who do science experiments and then have to write up the report, that's procedural. So chapter 25 onwards is procedural. But around 32, it will flip back to narrative and then go back to procedural because Bezalel starts work and that's procedural again, right? So when you do IKEA, do-it-yourself shelf, you go step by step. You don't flow through the story anymore. You stop. You rehearse. What's the step? What am I supposed to do? What product is supposed to come out? Pause. And then you can double check against other designs. So, for you all have different ways to do it. Some of you will listen to audio Bible. Some of you like to watch videos online. That's all great. Some of you who have got several people in your cell, actually, you all can divide and conquer and work on it together. So I gave you as an optional, if you want the Tabernacle Fun Worksheet that comes with that. Everything there is either wrong or missing. So if you all do that worksheet together, you can either listen to audio Bible or just read a little section and then try to adjust the drawing, check Google Images, check other designers, see whether you're right, right? Then share it with your group. There's a video there. The video is in Hebrew. So how? Who will give the English explanation? You. Okay, so because you are gonna, so as you play it and then you have different people in your group who worked on it, right? Then you all can explain it to each other. Right? Yeah. So that's the way you all get through the what, so that you get familiar with the objects and the things before we start moving deeper into the meaning. At the end, the last two pages of your notes, chapter 7 and 8, I have at the top, it's bottom of page 6, at the top, page 7, I have an explanation of the word atonement, because the word atonement first appears at this time. So when you hit that word in chapter 29, then you can check the meaning of that word, right? Atonement means to cover, literally cover. So Noah, when he put the pitch on his ark inside and outside, he covered it with a waterproofing material. That covering is atoned. So now it's more technically to cover for the purpose of. So now it's not for the purpose of making a boat. Now it's for the purpose of reconciling us to God, for the purpose of fulfilling or paying in full to appease God's judgment. That's right. Yeah, that kind of idea. Right? So that's where atonement comes from. Yeah. So I'm not actually going a lot into some of these devotional things today. Today my focus is only on the what is the tabernacle, and then the why we have it. And then the one last practice that you can do if you want is you can try page 8, practice 2, or you can try both. Page 7 and 8, practice 1 and 2. Because a lot of people, when they read the New Testament, because they think that the Old Testament is here, the New Testament is here, ma, then they finish reading, then they forget all about the Old Testament and throw it away, and then now they read the New Testament. So, of course, they cannot remember or understand the New Testament. So, the Old and the New Testament are supposed to be, the Old Testament is actually the foundation. And then the New Testament writers are drawing on that foundation in order to explain what this foundational context or the truths that were lived out or performed at the time, what it now means. Yeah. So, for the older ones of us who were in school when there was such a thing as an OHB, sorry to the younger ones who have never seen it, you know, there's this plastic with the diagrams on top, and then the science teacher puts it on the OHB. And then sometimes, in order to show the respiratory system and the blood system together, then they put one and the next one, right? And then when you look, it's superimposed and you can see the bottom one as well as the top one. So that's how you're supposed to read the New Testament. When you read the New Testament, you're supposed to be able to recognize that this person, this writer, is gesturing to an event in the past. That means you have to be able to see the Old Testament story that this writer is referencing. So I gave a little practice if you want. If you don't want to practice, that's fine. It's practice 1. But practice 2, I thought most of you all should be able to do it because it's Mark. And you all have read Mark, right? So they are familiar with it. So Mark 15. So it's a practice of the flipping. Practice 2. From the panning out where the whole scene, right, where Jesus is crucified, now gets dark, and then the zoom in on Jesus. And then after that, cut to another scene. And the cut to that other scene, there's one line there, it says, and the curtain of the tabernacle. So that's cutting to another scene. So in your mind, you should have a video cut of your movie. It must cut to the scene of the tabernacle. And you must know what is the picture in that scene. That means you must know what the tabernacle picture is. Okay, so those are the practices that you can do. And then after that, there are some questions on what is the significance then of this line when it says about the curtain of the tabernacle in Mark 15. Yeah. So go ahead and work on that yourself. Some of you will work on some parts in your cell group. No cell leader can cover everything with you, so it is your responsibility to work through some of these exercises, right? These are worksheets, not really notes. Right? So slowly just work through it yourself. Yeah. Thank you. So that's about the narrative, law, and procedure. Okay, now let's go to the next slide. Okay, good. Maybe we can do that nice tabernacle picture. I think that's very accurate, the first one, yeah. So I've been asked, I think it's a good question, by the young people. Very good. Young people are thinking, which is, why now then God has all these instructions? Because remember, when God talked to Abraham, it wasn't really an issue, right? How Abraham has to come before him, except for the blood of the lamb and the altar. But, you know, it wasn't like so elaborate. So I went back to think about it. Yeah, why? Because then after that, you have all these details and it gets a bit tedious. So why? Why now? I remember thinking about it and I thought, oh, well, do you think it might have to do with the reality that this is no longer one man or one family? Or one little clan, when Jacob brought his family to Egypt, is a 70-person clan, right? But now it's a whole nation of 2 million people. You know, Singapore resident population is 4 million plus, right? So it's actually half of us. Either you take the eastern half or the western half, you cut Singapore into half, it's half of us, right? Or if you were to take it that Israel is synonymous with the Christian journey, then it's about 19%, just below 20% of Christians, right? So if it's just below 20% of Christians of the resident population, then you're talking about 800,000, right? So Israel would have been 2.5 times. So could it have something to do with that now everyone has to move together? Could that be one reason? Could it be that one thing that God wanted was that he told Abraham that I will bless you, I will curse those who curse you, and then he says, the whole world will be blessed because of you. Now that Israel used to be just Jacob and his people, and Jacob's name, God changed it to Israel after he wrestled with God and fought with God. So now that name of one man is now the name of a nation. Could it be that God was now moving to the next phase, which is he had promised that you will be a blessing to the nations, so now it becomes nation to nation. And every nation, who your God is, must be very prominent. Not only for your own people to move together, which is a lot of people, right? The 2 million of them. But also that it becomes visible nation to nation. Deuteronomy 4, God says that all his laws, all these things, the covenant book and all that, all these things coming together, the point of all of it is that the other nations will see your wisdom. You'll see the goodness and the wisdom of God and they will come. Because it wasn't just about you. It's about them too. Remember? It wasn't just about the Israelites. God was also trying to communicate with the Egyptians, right? In the plagues and Passover message. Okay, so I think maybe that's one of the reasons why now. It's a good question. Why so many details? Maybe why don't we do a little experiment today? What happens if you didn't have the details? Let's get rid of it and then let's see what happens. That would be a good hypothesis for us to work on, right? Let's try this experiment without all the details. Yeah. Okay, there's just one more point I'd like to make, and then the media will be playing a rather longish video. It's about 5 minutes plus, so that's kind of longish for a message. But the purpose of that video is, I was telling you about procedure, right? You need to read a text, imagine it in your mind, and then compare it against another designer, and then work out the design. Right? So in order to practice that, could we just take 5 minutes to practice it? There'll be a text that will be read out. Try to imagine what it's saying. Compare your picture in your mind with what you see. That will also help us with the what a little bit better. Okay, yeah, thank you so much, Jackie.
Moreover, thou shalt make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, and blue, and purple, and scarlet, with cherubims of cunning work shalt thou make them. The length of 1 curtain shall be 8 and 20 cubits, and the breadth of 1 curtain 4 cubits, and every one of the curtains shall have 1 measure. The 5 curtains shall be coupled together one to another, and other 5 curtains shall be coupled one to another. And thou shalt make loops of blue upon the edge of the 1 curtain, from the selvage in the coupling. And likewise shalt thou make in the uttermost edge of another curtain, in the coupling of the second. 50 loops shalt thou make in the 1 curtain, and 50 loops shalt thou make in the edge of the curtain that is in the coupling of the second, that the loops may take hold one of another. And thou shalt make 50 tatches of gold, and couple the curtains together with the tatches, and it shall be 1 tabernacle. And thou shalt make curtains of goat's hair to be a covering upon the tabernacle. 11 curtains shalt thou make. The length of 1 curtain shall be 30 cubits, and the breadth of 1 curtain 4 cubits. And the 11 curtains shall be all of 1 measure. And thou shalt couple 5 curtains by themselves, and 6 curtains by themselves, and shalt double the 6th curtain in the forefront of the tabernacle. And thou shalt make 50 loops on the edge of the 1 curtain that is outmost in the coupling, and 50 loops in the edge of the curtain which coupleth the 2nd. And thou shalt make 50 tatches of brass, and put the tatches into the loops, and couple the tent together, that it may be 1. And the remnant that remaineth of the curtains of the tent, the half curtain that remaineth, shall hang over the backside of the tabernacle. And 1 cubit on the one side, and 1 cubit on the other side of that which remaineth in the length of the curtains of the tent. It shall hang over the sides of the tabernacle on this side and on that side, to cover it. And thou shalt make a covering for the tent of ram skins dyed red, and a covering above of badger's skins. And thou shalt make boards for the tabernacle of shittim wood, standing up, 10 cubits shall be the length of a board, and a cubit and a half shall be the breadth of one board. 2 tenons shall there be in one board, set in order one against another. Thus shalt thou make for all the boards of the tabernacle. And thou shalt make the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards on the south side southward. And thou shalt make 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under one board for his 2 tenons, and 2 sockets under another board for his 2 tenons. And for the second side of the tabernacle on the north side, there shall be 20 boards, and there 40 sockets of silver, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. And for the sides of the tabernacle westward, thou shalt make 6 boards. And 2 boards shalt thou make for the corners of the tabernacle in the 2 sides. And they shall be coupled together beneath, and they shall be coupled together above the head of it, unto one ring. Thus shall it be for them both, they shall be for the 2 corners. And they shall be 8 boards, and their sockets of silver 16 sockets, 2 sockets under one board, and 2 sockets under another board. And thou shalt make bars of shittim wood, 5 for the boards on the one side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards on the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the boards of the side of the tabernacle for the 2 sides westward. And the middle bar in the midst of the boards shall reach from end to end. And thou shalt overlay the boards with gold, and make their rings of gold for places for the bars, and thou shalt overlay the bars with gold. And thou shalt rear up the tabernacle according to the fashion thereof which was showed thee in the mount. And thou shalt make a veil of blue, and purple, and scarlet, and fine twined linen of cunning work, with cherubims shall it be made. And thou shalt hang it upon the 4 pillars of shittim wood, overlaid with gold. Their hooks shall be of gold, upon the 4 sockets of silver. And thou shalt hang up the veil under the taches, that thou mayest bring in thither within the veil the ark of the testimony. And the veil shall divide unto you between the holy place and the most holy. And thou shalt put the mercy seat upon the ark of the testimony in the most holy place. And thou shalt set the table without the veil, and the candlestick over against the table on the side of the tabernacle, towards the south. And thou shalt put the table on the north side. And thou shalt make an hanging for the door of the tent, of blue and purple and scarlet, and fine twined linen, wrought with needlework. And thou shalt make for the hangings 5 pillars of shittim wood, and overlay them with gold, and their hooks shall be of gold, and thou shalt cast 5 sockets of brass for them.
Thank you. So that's one thing, how we can read it. The second way that I just want to help you to read this text, and then we're done with the what part, is try to read it side by side with texts that tell you what to do with that thing. So in a while, the media team will help play a very short 1-minute video, but as you watch it, there's no words. Can you try to actively use two things? One is try to read it beside texts that tell you the verb part, the verb with the noun. That is what you do, the actions together with the object. So when there is, I just give them one demo first. So when there is the big altar, right? The brazen altar. You imagine the actions that go with it. So you have the priest, you have the killing of the animal, the bull, the pieces go on top, the liver, the head and all that, and then the blood being put into a container, and then the, so the action, the narrative part, don't read it as if it has nothing to do with this thing. try to read it side by side. Sometimes you can, on your computer, you can have two texts side by side, or you can use your Bible and your phone. Then that way you can see Leviticus when they say, tell you what to do with it, together with that object, right? So imagine the bull on the altar, right? Then in order to enter the most holy place, you have the washing. Later on, of course, we can always talk about what the meaning of that means, how the word of God cleanses us, how we are transformed. There are deeper meanings, but for now, just the actions of what is the priest doing as he is washing, going through this washing in order to enter. And then you can think about what it means, you know, how when we enter before God, what does this mean for how I enter before God, right? And then after that, when you go into the holy place, you have the north side and the south side, right? You have the lamp, and this lamp stand looks very different from the one that I gave you. The one I gave you is what you see in the movies. But this lamp stand with, you know, three branches on each side and a central shaft. You think of the lighting of all these lamps, the pouring of the oil. That's what the priest is doing, right? And then after that, you can also think of what Jesus says in the New Testament. For example, when Jesus said, "I am the light of the world," what does that mean? Or when Jesus said to us, "You are the light of the world," you know, a light on the hilltop, right? Cannot be hidden. What does that mean? When you go on to Revelation and you see the lampstand and the Lord Jesus walking amongst it, this lampstand is the church, right? We as the light of the world, right? So the symbolism, it begins to echo down the ages, right? But for now, what the priest is doing, so that you're familiar with that. And then they have the table on the other side with the bread. This bread is what the priest has, and only the priest can eat it, no one else. This bread is then referenced later on by Jesus in the New Testament. And then you have another altar. It's the double height and to its width, right? And then that's where the fire from this altar must come from the outside altar, because the fire from the outside altar came directly from God. Then the incense is burned on this altar, not on a censer, which is, you know, a little bowl with the handles. It has to be burned on the altar, right? And then there's a curtain, right? The curtain has got cherubim. A lot of times we think of cherubim as these fat, cute angels. Actually, the first time that cherubim appeared was in Genesis 3, when human beings became fundamentally, in our nature, different from God. We now have a sin nature, and therefore Adam and Eve could no longer live in the presence of a holy God. And then they could no longer be there. They were banished from the garden, and the cherubim was guarding. So it indicates God's judgment, it indicates separation from God. Have you ever wondered why this whole tabernacle is cherubim on the curtains, cherubim on this shielding curtain? You think it's because it's a nice pattern? If it's about God's love, you should have apples and oranges and flowers, right? But you don't, you have cherubim. So what does this curtain with cherubim mean? When you know what happened in Genesis 3, what is it indicating? Remember that time? Because man was separated from God. So God is coming back to the old problem. There was an old problem. And the old problem was, how can a holy God live amongst a sinful people? I put that question on your page one of your notes. This whole tabernacle is God going back in time, a couple of thousand years, to that old problem at the start. It is still his heart. that he will dwell with us. It was supposed to happen on the seventh day.
Remember?
And then Adam and Eve together with God. So this cherubim, God is coming back to that old problem. And he's trying to resolve it. Is there a way that two fundamentally incompatible natures, that God can still be among us? And then, of course, the presence of God on the other side. When you read on to Leviticus chapter 16 and so on, you imagine the high priest, right, with his effort of all those precious stones indicating Israel, the different tribes of Israel, which he holds near his heart. He's got a censer with a little container. He takes the coals from within this altar, right? Because that's that you can't just take fire from anywhere. Because this fire came from that outside altar where the sacrifice of the bull and the animals were. Right? Then he has the bowl of blood from the animal, the lamb or goat. Right? So now, and then he goes to the edge of the curtain and he kind of like wiggles his way in or something, right? And then the billowing smoke, he's now on the other side. And then the smoke is all over because of the incense burning. And then he comes before that Ark of the Covenant, right? And then he uses his finger in the blood, right? And then he's sprinkling the blood between the cherubim. Yeah, why cherubim again? How come not roses and hearts, right? And then God speaks to him from within the atonement seat. You notice that there's the mercy seat, there is blood, and then the book of the covenant is inside. So again, you see the book and the blood together, right, in that same Ark of the Covenant. So it's important that, I mean, we can preach a lot on it from a devotional angle, but if you're not familiar with it, it might not flow. So you need to familiarize yourself with it first. Yeah. So as you watch this now, could you do a little practice? It's only 1 minute. Try to imagine for each thing. Don't watch passively. Use your mind to think, okay, what is the priest doing here? What is happening there? Why is there this curtain? What does it mean? Try to come up with questions. And later in your small group, you got a lot of questions to ask, right? Practice once. So imagine what the priest is doing. How does he enter? What does he do in the holy place? Now let's go on to part two. And so remember the thing about this tabernacle is that it is now a sign that is visible to all the people in Israel. But as a nation, this sign, the tabernacle, is sign meaning like the Singapore flag is a sign, right? If you're go to school, you wear a certain kind of uniform, then people know you are from that school. Then that's a sign, right? That people, it's a recognizable sign. You drive a prestigious car, people know, oh, this rich man, right? So it's a sign, right? We all are showing signs to others. So the tabernacle is a sign. It's a sign to the next nations. As you read through chapter 25 through 30, 31, you will find it interesting that it leaves off law, the Ten Commandments, right? Now it moves in to the description of the tabernacle. But at the end, in chapter 31, it comes back to law. Flips back at the end of chapter 31. But not all the laws. Only one. Why only one? And which one? So you notice, we are now in part two, huh? The law that is talked about is the Sabbath law. Now, it's a very strange thing, right? Of all the laws, you think that the one thing God wanted to remind us is don't murder. Because we all think, do not murder is the important one. Or maybe because we are an Asian Chinese society, it must be honor your father and mother. Of course, we all agree that's the important one. But why he go and choose, never choose this that we feel is the important one? He go and choose what we feel is the not so important one, which is the honor the Sabbath. So why is the Sabbath here? It's supposed to be thrown over there with the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, right? We've already moved on. Now this whole text is the procedural text. What does the Sabbath have to do with the tabernacle? And I'm thinking, is it because there is a tabernacle out there which is the sign and the symbol to us and to all the nations, and God shows us how we are to come before Him? But we too, we as a nation, as a community, we also are a tabernacle. We live this honor and worship of the Most High God in the pacing of our lives, in how we relate to God and with one another, right? And later on, Jesus does say, all men will know that you are disciples because you love one another. So there are two reasons given, and there's a table next. Where the verse reads across, and then the next in your text, in your, is it page 4? I put the next verse down below because it has to do with holiness, right? So there's an explanation, two reasons that are related, and then God then explains one reason and then comes back to the first reason, right? So could we just read out this, read from here to there, and then continue on the, because the holiness reason comes after that. Okay, let's read 1, 2, 3. Yeah, so you notice there's a phrase, holy to you, holy to me, right? Because God is speaking, right? It's holy to you, holy to me. I have a friend that I minister to. I mean, not close, but the situation has been that she has not been on good terms with her husband. But one of the things she had told me a while ago was that when her wedding anniversary day drew near, she set that day aside to have dinner with her husband, right? Because even though their marriage was going very, very badly, she still felt that this day still meant that she had set herself apart, set apart, holy, right? Set apart, set herself apart to him, and he had set himself apart to her. But, I mean, the sad thing was that he didn't bother. He said he's busy, he never came back. He usually doesn't come back until very, very late. Usually they don't even see him the whole week. And when he didn't even bother to come back to have dinner with her on their wedding anniversary, even though she had asked him and, you know, and tried to arrange something, she just said to me that that day she realized what her relationship meant to him, what she meant to him and what this relationship meant to him. And this friend, this person is not Singaporean. And she told me she wants to go back to her country. And she told me that she will tell her children what to do, like wake up and take care of yourself when she goes home. That means she's going to walk out, you know. I mean, as of today, I still know her. She hasn't gone off yet. But I remember that was a very, very, I mean, she was quite emotional and she talked about how she still thought that day might matter to her husband. But then she realized it didn't. So I guess that's the question to you. Is this day holy to you, holy to the Lord, as it is holy to the Lord? Is it something that you set apart? Yeah. And then there's the next reason. We come to the next slide. So in your notes, you notice I arrange it back. Yeah? And now I give you the second reason, which is, you notice the reason, we'll come back to this first reason, which is, it's a sign, it's a covenant on this 6 days God created the world. This was how it was. It's a sign. So I guess the question I would ask you is it necessary that a covenant, a permanent exclusive relationship is recognizable to other people? I have interesting colleagues. I had a colleague who was a swinging bachelor. He's always going for overseas holidays with lots of friends. And then one day the gossip went around the teacher staff room. I was a teacher. Teacher staff room to say, he's now married. And then all the teachers are like, gossip, like, when did he get married? Who did he get married to? Then someone says, I remember a long time ago I saw him with this girl. Then someone says, well, who knows? It might not be the same person, right? So then that particular school holiday, he went as usual for another overseas trip with, you know, his good friends, his male colleagues. And then one group of them, and then we were all down there wondering, huh, you know, is there anything that indicates that this person is married? Like, there's no sign. I had another colleague who told a group of us teachers that after she got married, right, and then it's like, then she told us that she purposely didn't wear her wedding ring. Right? She's a very attractive lady, curls and always wearing nice dresses. And she said that she didn't wear her wedding ring because she didn't want men to treat her differently. She likes it when, you know, men show interest in her and think that maybe they got chance, right? So that's why she doesn't want to lose out on the game, right? So she purposely don't wear her wedding ring so that the other male colleagues wouldn't know that she's married, right? So I guess I would ask you that question, right? This is a sign, a covenant. That is what the Sabbath is, that matters to God, that it's not a wedding ring you wear, but it is in this community that it will be a sign to each other and to others and to myself, God says, that you belong to me, right? Now, of course, these texts are very, very extreme. It says that there's the death penalty for those who don't observe the Sabbath. So I just want to clarify a few things. Observing the Sabbath is not synonymous with go to church, and it's not synonymous with go to church on Sunday. Now, so says someone who thinks it's very serious to be here. I think it's very serious to be here. I think it's important to be here when you are here, and that's a Sunday morning. I do know that there are communities who, because of their cultural background, as they follow Isa al-Masih, they meet only on Fridays, right? Because that's the culture of that community. I do know that there are congregations that meet on Saturdays. or Mondays, especially if they are lounge singers or they do, I guess, F&B, right? Then they meet on a Monday. That becomes their Sabbath. So as we consider this and the seriousness of it, as we, all of us, we are a tabernacle, a sign to God, where God's holiness dwells amongst us, how can we consider it as the Lord Jesus lived with grace and truth, right? So I go on to the next slide, and in your notes, I give you the verse itself. It's Mark chapter 2 and 3. At the end of Mark chapter 2, his disciples are picking grain on a Sabbath. That's a Saturday. And the Pharisees, of course, following the Old Testament, following Exodus, say they're not supposed to do that. And then Jesus answers, and the verse is there inside your notes. You check it out yourself. He gives an example. When David was on the run from Saul, the priest gave him that bread. Remember, that bread was only supposed to be eaten by the priest. But he gave that bread to David. Right? So now, what does this mean? Do we just like break rules randomly? Like Jesus is just not honoring the Sabbath? He doesn't care? No. Jesus explained the Sabbath was made for men. And that is the same as the Exodus verse that says, in 6 days God made the earth, right? So I gave you some key phrases there. So remember that God made everything in 6 days. He could have kept it at 6 days. Why was the seventh day made? It was made for men. Because man was made in the image of God, we were made at our heart fundamentally to commune with an eternal God. And so that seventh day, that special day, was a day where we would rest in God, which means we are inside blessing. It's not throwing blessings at us, but we are resting in the blesser himself. Yeah. So when we come to the heart of it, and then it flows on to Mark 3. A lot of times you all read your chapters by chapter. That chapter is not inspired, you know. Actually, end of Mark 2 and start of Mark 3, it flows as the same similar incidents, right? And it's a similar incident in which he's in a synagogue. Someone has a medical issue. Jesus wants to heal him, that guy with the shriveled hand. And then people feel it's wrong. And Jesus asks a question. Do we do good on the Sabbath or do evil, right? And so it comes back to the fundamental reality of who God is. When God, as a good God, made us on the sixth day, made the seventh day as a good God, wanting us to dwell with Him, that we might live out His nature and His goodness. So the point of the Sabbath is not to start to nitpick on asking the wrong question. We never got to church Sunday. Not like that, right? Sometimes people do need time to learn what it means, right? Maybe we need to take time to instruct. It's not about being ungracious to, you know, sometimes when kids come and they are messing around, they don't know what, right? So we can explain things to them, right? It's not suddenly becoming very legalistic, but taking it very, very seriously, but going beneath the form to ask what are the foundational truths and questions, what is the life that this tabernacle us is supposed to live out, right? Of who we are fundamentally as spiritual beings communing with God. We are a tabernacle. God's holiness is here. People will know and who God is when they come amongst our midst, right? What is the purpose of us meeting? It's quite interesting. I was listening to this interview of a guy who grew up in church. Some of y'all have watched that video. I showed it in one of my training. And he had left God. He had left Jesus because he felt that he was quite a good guy. And after the church has been telling him that he has sinned, he felt, not really, I think I'm quite a good guy, so I don't think I need to stick around here anymore. And so the interviewer, Sean McDowell, was asking him, oh, you know, you've been in church for like 25 years, you know, and then now you leave. What do you think is the thing you miss most? And he said, oh, I miss the family of God. I miss us drawing close together in our relationships. And then it was quite an amicable discussion between them. And then so this guy who had left said, well, Sean, what do you think? I wonder why we don't have churches that have nothing to do with Jesus, but we all just get together and just love one another. I'd like to attend such a church, you know, because don't talk about sin, nothing to do with God or Jesus. It's just, you know, nice people coming together and let's all just be together, right? So he was asking Sean, yeah, I'd like to attend such a church, you know, nothing to do with sin or gospel, but we can just be together. Then he asked Sean, why do you think these churches, because I'd like to attend one, why do you think such churches don't exist? Because the tabernacle of the Most High God has to do with the severity of God's judgment as well as the blood sacrifice that allows us to enter in, right? So now you remove that and say, hey, we are still, you know, a church. We still come together. And Sean said, well, it might have to do with the deeper purpose of why we even come together in the first place. just nice people coming together to feel good together might not be a sufficient enough purpose. Yeah, it's just a nice conversation. So as we think about this Sabbath regulation, yes, it is a regulation. Yes, it is something we must take seriously. But we must also ask ourselves, beneath the form, what is the truth? What is the question that is being answered in the Sabbath practice? Because then, if we don't live the Sabbath, later on in the Old Testament, you will see that the sacrifices were still being made. But the Sabbath was not kept. And the Sabbath is not about Sunday, eh? So Sabbath has got a few meanings. One is on the seventh day, I spend time with God, with myself, with one another. Right? So for some who you and your family, you rush to church. Then after that, by 11:30, you got rush to tuition. Then two tuitions on Sunday, you know, for your kids. Maybe you want to ask God if that's a Sabbath for your kids. So the Sabbath also means the 49th year. It also means the seventh year. So for example, Hebrew slaves that sold themselves to be slaves because they couldn't pay back a debt, they are supposed to be released on the seventh year. That's a Sabbath year. So later in the Old Testament, you find that people, the society, no longer released their slaves on the seventh year. They just kept the slaves to work for them for free, forever kind of thing, right? So God was very displeased with that, and eventually his judgment came upon the community, right? And that's how Daniel ended up in Babylon later on for all these judgments, right? So that's the seventh year. And then then you had the 49th year. That's also a Sabbath Jubilee year, right? So Daniel knew that the reason that God's judgment had come on them is because they did not give the land to rest, the justice to their workers who were supposed to be released on the seventh year, and therefore judgment came and they had to stop everything for 70 years. Until they had paid back all the Sabbaths back to God, right? They owed God a debt of Sabbath. So this is a very serious thing. But as we are considering it as a serious thing, we must remember what is the underlying question that is answering, right? So sometimes when people say, oh, when you go on a holiday, could you consider the Sabbath day? It's not trying to restrict you, but perhaps your first consideration is not the cheapest air ticket. Maybe your first consideration is why, or is there a purpose for you missing the Sabbath? Or if you went on a long trip, 3 weeks with your family, then on the Sabbath day, do you gather with your family in the hotel room? And before you all go off to Disneyland, you all take time to read the word and worship and pray, right? So the form can shift around, but the honor to God on that day takes, you know, precedence. You know, when kids come, like just now our leader said, parents pray with your kids, right? It's we're not saying, oh, don't make noise. That not no, right? People also need time to learn how to honor God. So we have the grace part, and then we also have taking it very seriously. Okay, let's move on to the challenge given to me, which is, why do we need all these details? Is it even necessary? So let's go on to chapter 32. So let's say we say there is no tabernacle. So chapter 32 is the experiment scenario. Okay. At chapter 32, there's no tabernacle, right? Yeah. So people are worried, right? They are wondering where Moses is. Now, this is a very normal thing. We will get worried and we will want to seek God. So when the people of Israel got worried, they started to ask Aaron to do some things for them. Could we just read this together? Let's read together. 1, 2, 3. Okay, so let's move on to the next table. You have the table, I think it's end of chapter 4, page 4. So, yeah. So you'll notice that in Exodus 24, remember the covenant blood and book last week, there is a series of events. And then now in chapter 32, you'll notice that people do similar things as what Moses did. Moses got up early. They got up early. Moses got the young men to do kill the bulls. They did so. They did the burnt offering and fellowship offering. And so people did that as well. So they copied some things because, you know, here and there they saw some things. So they copied some things. Not very detailed. They don't really know the details of it, but they saw a few things. You will notice after that, Moses reads the covenant book. But in your notes, you will notice a big blank patch because it's empty. Because the people, there's no covenant book. They have the blood, but no book. So they make the golden calf. The golden calf has to do with the gods of that have brought them out of Egypt. So the gods would have been the Egyptian pantheon of gods, right? So rather than the first law, which is you have no other gods before me, they had all these gods, do not bow down or worship to anything, but they have made this golden calf. It's something that they have seen. So people are not blank slates. They are not sitting there and do nothing when they don't know how to come before God. People will still want to come before God because we all have worries and problems in our lives. But when we come before God, our people come before God, it will end up being like that, right? A little bit here, a little bit there, and then missing out a whole gap and not really sure. And then they fill in the gaps themselves, which is they got up to engage in revelry. What does this revelry mean? When Moses came down the mountain and it describes them as running wild, it's similar to the like temple prostitution and religions of the nations around them, which is, you know, where people are licentious or there's an orgy or, you know, they strip off their clothing and it's basically this you know, sexed up thing, you know. So it's like very dishonoring of the body that God had just saved them out of Egypt so that their bodies would not be oppressed. But now they are using their bodies for something that dishonors them. So let's move on to the next slide. Are we there? Oh, we're already at the song, is it? Okay, thanks. What happened in chapter 32, and I hope you can read the details for yourself, and I put the details in your notes, which is the people were running wild and were so out of control with their bodies and with one another, much less trying to talk sense to anyone, that when Moses came down, and Moses was angry, and Moses broke the tablets, and Moses broke the golden calf and ground it into powder, they didn't stop. And then he made people drink that, and then he questioned Aaron severely. They still didn't stop until the Levites had to take their swords and go and execute people. Then people came to their senses. So the thing is, people don't just not seek to pray or worship, but they will have their own things, you know, their own superstitions and so on. So that is why, so that's the experiment. If you think that detail is not necessary, well, that's what happens. So that's why chapter 32 is given right there, so that you will know why you really need that amount of detail. If you didn't, this is the situation that happens. Yeah. Okay, in a while, I'm going to explain this song to you first. It's a song, it's one of those songs that should not be sung unless your people know what it means. Because otherwise, when they sing, they'll be like, oh, and then the fires of revival. And everyone's like, ooh. Okay, that's not what it is. Next week, you're going to be examining all the way to Leviticus 10. And this fires of revival is a pretty solemn, sobering matter, right? So that's for next week. But I'll explain it first, and then we can sing it together to end off. So it begins, I came unto the gathering of the people of the Lord and found my way among them to his throne. This front part is talking about coming in and to seek the Holy of Holies. Now, the person writing this is writing after this curtain of Mark 15. That means you have to go back and discuss what happened on Mark 15 when the curtain split. And then he can access the throne room of God, right? At this point in BC 1500, this curtain is still there, right? So he is writing as a Christian believer later on in time after what Jesus has done, right? But the rest of it is still quite relevant to that time. Right. Then he goes on to say he went to the altar and to renew the covenant. So you notice it's the altar that allows him to access the throne room of God. The altar where the blood sacrifices were done. He wasn't just rocking up to God's presence, you see. He acknowledged that what was done on the altar, what was done by the Lord Jesus, right? That's why he's talking about the altar and then and renewing the covenant of the book and the blood. That's what he's referencing. So I hope now that you have studied it, when you sing a song like that, it's with understanding and not just emotions, right? Then I just explained the next stanza first. Then the next stanza, it says, I wanted to discover the first love I once had shared. That's the lampstand, and it's referencing Revelations, right? Because Jesus said, I walked among you in the tabernacle, right? I came, I walked among you, among the lampstands. The lampstands was the people of God. And you have lost your first love. That's in Revelation, right? So that's the lampstand. That's why. And then may you pour the oil onto the flame. It's it's kind of like the, remember the wise and the foolish virgins? It's not, it's, some of you don't know what I'm talking about. It's okay. Yeah. But, the wise virgins were the ones who, attended to their faith and put aside resources for it, while the foolish virgins just assumed things would be fine, and then it turned out that they ran out of oil, right? So that is the feeding of your faith when we come together as a congregation. So could we just sing this? I think Kenneth will help all of us sing.
Just rise.
I came to the gathering of the people of the Lord and found my way among them to His throne. I needed to return unto the altar of my God to renew again my covenant with Him. And there I built an altar to His name and realized my life would never be the same. And then the fires of revival came sweeping through my soul, and I touched the holy presence of my God. Come build an altar unto the Lord. Return to worship and hear His word. And the fires of revival will come sweeping through your soul and will touch the holy presence of our God. I wanted to discover the first love we once had shared, rekindling the fire deep within. I found the lamp still flickering in the temple of the Lord, and poured a horn of oil to the flame. And there I built an altar to His name and realized my life would never be the same. And then the fires of revival came sweeping through my soul, and I touched the holy presence of my God. Come build an altar unto the Lord. Return to worship and hear His word. And the fires of revival will come sweeping through your soul and will touch the holy presence of our God.
Sing it again, quietly and meditatively.
Come build an altar unto worship and hear His word, and the fires of revival come sweeping through my soul and will touch the holy presence of my God.
Thank you so much, Ken.
And will touch.
Father, You are really here. The tabernacle was not just out there. We are the tabernacle. And as You and Your holiness dwelt in that tabernacle, so You were serious about the Sabbath because You are here in our midst. God, we confess that often we have not come in faith. It's a bit like Zechariah in the book of Matthew when he went and burned the incense. He's not even expecting you to turn up. Always been your plan from that seventh day of creation that you are here, and when the cherubim indicated that man can no longer live in your presence, you have been pondering how to solve this, and the tabernacle was your grand idea that you would dwell with us again. You were so excited when you told Moses about this idea. Fortunately, your people did not wait to hear it, because we have our own ruts. We have our own ways of doing things. So God, will you transform all our hearts from young to old, my own as well, because I also have this, Sunday again. I also want to honor you because you said in Revelation, each of us, this tabernacle, we are that lampstand and you walked in our midst. It's a scary thing. Because next week when we learn Leviticus 10, what the fire did, that's not funny. But from the fires that came down on the altar, then came the fire of the Holy Spirit on Pentecost. And we are entering into that season next month when we study the Spirit of God. Thank you that we are here to live a reality. Not a religion, but a reality. We thank you for your word today. Guide our discussion. Burn in our hearts that love for you. And for your tabernacle, your people, and for your Sabbath.